This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Every woman, every man, join the caravan of love. Stand up. Stand up.
So, do you have a caravan, but you've got nowhere to put it? How hard is it to find a caravan park to stay in at the moment? Are caravan parks simply full of cabins and not caravans? Or have they been pulled down altogether to make way for apartments? So in Hervey Bay in Queensland, the demand for caravan accommodation is skyrocketing, but the spaces for caravans are declining. So is it the same here in Victoria? This summer, do you have a caravan but nowhere to place it? 1300 222 774. And also later this hour, are you a woman in midlife and do you have no desire to have sex? The largest study of its kind shows that half of the women in midlife have zero libido. So is this you, and what stress is it causing in your life? And as you've heard today, it is our ABC Gives Appeal. Today is our Giveathon. In just a moment, we will cross to our tally room to see where we're at. But do you have a caravan and nowhere to take it this summer? 1300 777 774.
She's my sister. She's my sister.
Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Coming up in just a moment, do you have a caravan and nowhere to take it this summer? Are caravan parks dying out? Are they full? Are they full of cabins and not caravans? Or has the local caravan park in your area, has it simply been pulled down to make way for apartments? 1300 222 774, and you can text 0437 774 774. But as you've been hearing all day, my goodness, you are a generous lot. We are in the middle of our Giveathon today. The ABC Gives Appeal, as you've been hearing, is teaming up with OzHarvest. And OzHarvest do incredible work. They provide food relief for people in need, and that could be any one of us at any given time. On top of that, they're saving food from going to landfill. As you've been hearing, every dollar donated creates two meals. And down in our tally room, our very own Kate Mead, who is at OzHarvest. Kate, we have such generous listeners because seriously, every dollar, it makes a huge difference. It's $2, it's two meals that are created for Victorians. But can you just tell us a little bit about who you've met today and what you've witnessed? Because I know when I'm in tally rooms like that, I get a bit teary actually because of just the love and generosity and how giving everybody is.
Well, thank you so much for saying that, Rochelle, because I am a little bit teary. Earlier this morning, Tony joined Bob and Charnel for a little bit of a chat, and I've just sat down with him again. And I was asking him about, you know, when you get home after a day of working for the organization, you go, "Ooh, I'm going to remember that." And he just shared with me something that he said will stay with him forever. And that was a woman, when they arrived to deliver the food that OzHarvest had prepared from all the food that had been donated from businesses around Melbourne. And she said, "You've just delivered Christmas."
Oh.
Without your delivery today, there would be families with no food on the kitchen table today. And I am seeing in this tally room messages that come in with people's donation, and they can be everything from "thank you for your work" to "you got me back on my own feet again, thank you for your work." And as of right now, Rochelle, like, these are the numbers that we're talking about. We have that goal of $250,000. We are at $158,926,000. So, and to put that into perspective, this is like for every $1, we double it in terms of meals. So 317,852 meals. That's an incredible effort. And this organization donates 100,000 meals a week.
I know.
Just let that sink in.
I know.
For a moment. That's the impact that you're having.
That's right. And these, it could be any of us. We've learnt over the years, and in particular as a result of COVID, that for many of us, we are just that couple of steps away from needing help and needing to reach out, and knowing that these places do it with such dignity and let you do it so you keep your pride, you can have a shoulder to cry on, or just have a warm cuppa with someone and have that moment there to know that someone else has got your back. And it is incredible work. People volunteer. I know they have a handful of paid members as well. So we're trying to get to $250,000. And a part of that will also be a bit of a silent auction for our trivia night, where there's a little extra button where you can click on. Jacinta and Brian are hosting a trivia night. You can pick the presenter's table you want to go on to. Kate, do you want to sit on my table?
You know, I'd be absolutely useless. That's what I would say to you. So that would be the issue.
If we're both useless, does that cancel it out and then we become okay? I'm not sure.
But come bid. Come get on Rochelle's table. Do you know what?
Well, look,
if there's
good.
One
we
thing,
dress
we may
well.
Not win. We may not win, but we'll have the most amount of fun. I tell you what, if there's one table that's going to be the fun table, it will be yours. And what I would say is when you're on abc.net.au/gives, that's where you make the donation. If you're looking to make that bid for one of our amazing presenters at ABC Radio Melbourne 774, you've just got to scroll down just a little bit further, just so that people don't get confused. So you'll see a great big donate button now. But if you would like to bid to be on the fun Rochelle table, just scroll down just that little bit further and you will have that option to make that bid there.
Love that. You may not win, but you'll have a good time. But you never know as well, depending on the questions. You never know. I'm surprised more people are when I've actually known the answer to something. Kate, we'll touch base with you a little later in the program to see how we're going. Thanks so much.
Thanks, so, Rochelle.
If you want to donate, you can go to abc.net.au/VicGives to make a donation. Of course, there are people waiting at OzHarvest to take your donation as well. You can give them a buzz, 9999 5077. So just to repeat, abc.net.au/VicGives to make a donation, or you can give them a call, 9999 5077. 13 minutes after 11. This summer holidays, are you planning a caravan? I don't know about you, but I'm seeing more caravans than ever out on the road. And I am seeing some pretty fancy, pimped out, hotted up caravans as well. But do we have enough caravan parks for the amount of caravans that we have? This summer, do you have somewhere to park your caravan?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Do you have a caravan and nowhere to put it? In Queensland, in Hervey Bay, the demand for caravan spaces is skyrocketing, but the number of places to put them is actually declining. So is that happening here? And if you travel around as well, and this is not just grey nomads in inverted commas, this is for families and for individuals who love to caravan. David Pratt is a past president and senior advisor of the Caravan and Residential Parks Association. David, in Queensland, there's a demand for caravan parks, but we just don't have enough of them. Is the same thing happening here in Victoria?
I think it is, in a way. We certainly don't have enough for what the demand is for people and more young families that are wanting to get out and enjoy the caravanning experience.
So why is that? Is it because we're pulling down caravan parks to make way for apartments?
Not in Victoria. We really haven't had any new tourist holiday parks created in the state for about 25 years. So what we're seeing is that the existing parks are there, but the demand for caravanning is increasing. We're working much closer with the government and parties of all sides to see whether we can arrange for more of unused Crown land that is in the ideal locations for caravan parks to be developed and provide more places for families.
So that's interesting. And what sort of response have you had?
very positive response from the government on this. Obviously, there are a lot of lead times. There's a lot of planning that has to go. But having that positive dialogue as an association with the government, we think it'll lead to positive outcomes so that we can create those great intergenerational holidays that is almost ingrained into our DNA.
So when we talk about using Crown land to create more caravan parks because the desire is rising to own and to have a caravanning holiday, would that then be locally owned caravan parks or privately owned? Because that's a part of the issue that we're seeing in Queensland as well, that are not government owned, but, you know, council owned or council run caravan parks are gone, that they're individuals or that they're privately owned. And then sometimes the desire to just get rid of them and to make some money and put apartments there will overrun the desire to have that classic Aussie holiday.
Well, the good news is when it's on Crown land, those sort of componentry can't happen. What has happened in the past is that the Crown has provided the lease for the caravan park, and that use has to maintain. Many councils in the past ran the caravan parks, but it's not their core activity, and they're being called upon more and more for other services. So what we've seen in our environment is that there are more and more corporate players, as well as mum and dads, that are willing to invest in the Crown land to create these assets and these holidays, but they are for holiday and caravan park usage.
Why is the number growing, do you think? Because often we have this stereotypical image of someone who caravans as being an older person in their retirement years. But anecdotally, David, I am seeing so many caravans out on the road, and there's people of all ages.
Absolutely. And I think what we're seeing is that many of us that are of an older generation are trying to create those holidays or recreate those holidays that are more back to experience level, not just on a high dollar budget. There's very few other holiday options where you can get that intergenerational holidays where grandparents can holiday with kids, grandkids and cousins. The mix between cabins and caravans has to be balanced because not everyone has the ability to store or tow a van. So you may find the older generation may choose to stay in the cabin where we're seeing some amazing caravans being built. And Victoria is really the leader in manufacturing of the towable caravans in the country.
When we look at caravan owners and wanting a space, is that a space because they're travelling to different states, to different parts of Victoria, or do most caravan owners rent a permanent site?
The mix of those that are renting a permanent site is becoming less because most people are looking at that experience base. So they're creating more and more holidays. As a former caravan park owner myself, we would get many families that would be, that have their group of favourite caravan parks that they wanted to go to. So they might go for a different one at Easter, and we would get guests that were coming back 7-8 times a year, which is, it's a fantastic indictment on the industry that people want to get out more often.
It's interesting to know that more space is potentially going to be opened up. So I guess just finally, can you see our appetite for caravans continuing to increase?
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, it is ingrained in our DNA as Australians that our caravans and our ability to see this great country and do it on a budget that everyone can afford, that's what we have to strive to maintain.
Good to get your thoughts on this, David. Thank you. David Pratt, the past president and senior advisor to the Caravan and Residential Parks Association. Don't forget, today is our give-a-thon, as you've been hearing all morning. We are teaming up with OzHarvest, and every dollar that you donate is two meals that is created for Victorians who are going through a hard time at the moment. To make that donation, you can go to abc.net.au/VicGives, or you can give OzHarvest a call. There are people there, including our very own Kate Mead, ready to take your call. The number's 9999 5077.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
And we've been hearing all morning some of the incredible work that's been done by OzHarvest to help those who are in need. It's the reason why we've partnered up with them for this year's ABC Gives Appeal. But on top of that, they are so creative. So if you have a look on the OzHarvest website, there are some really bougie products that you can buy. It's all made from the food and the items that are donated, but they have this incredible innovation team. Now, that is led by Claire Fintoff-Phillips, who is the brand and innovation manager at OzHarvest. Claire, you kind of had me at chili jam, can I just say, when I jumped onto your website to have a look at some of the products that you're creating and selling from scratch. It looks like something that you would see in a beautiful providor, but this is your social enterprise arm of OzHarvest. They look great.
Thank you so much. We're pretty proud of them. I think they're exceptional products. And the most amazing thing about our products is that we're making really beautiful things from farm produce that would otherwise go to waste, and that proceeds from our products are going back to OzHarvest to help continue the impact that OzHarvest makes across the country, rescuing more food and feeding more people.
So where did the idea for an innovation arm for OzHarvest come from?
We were looking at new ways of thinking about how we could use produce, beautiful produce that would otherwise go to waste that can't be used for food rescue. So working with farmers and local producers to come up with products that we knew that people would really enjoy, and the additional good that it gives back is ensuring that every product we sell is an additional way to support OzHarvest. So the products that we have, like beautiful lemonade, our jams, our chili sauces, every sale will go back to OzHarvest. One can of lemonade, for instance, will provide one meal for someone in our community in need.
How hot's your chili sauce? Like, if it was out of 10?
Ooh, I think that that is dependent on, there's a very huge debate around the hotness of chili sauce. So I think it depends on your personal preferences. I would call it a medium. So
it depends how much you can handle your chilies. Do you know who might know is Jackie Harvey, who's the owner of Yarra Valley Gourmet Foods, who I know you reached out to come together and to innovate and to make these products. Jackie, you saw there was a heap of chilies and a heap of tomatoes. You bang those two things together and it is sweet, sweet heaven. How hot's your chili sauce?
Thanks for having us, Rochelle. No, I would agree with Claire. It is a medium. We like to make things that everybody can enjoy, not just those crazy hotheads that want it hotter than ever.
Like me. More chili.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity for you to be able to not only produce beautiful foods, but knowing that you're doing it for a good cause. How has this been good for you, Jackie?
Oh, it's absolutely a fantastic relationship. We've enjoyed the journey. It's only been a year with us, with OzHarvest and Claire. And really, yeah, it started with fruit. You know, the Yarra Valley, where I'm based, grows 70% of Victoria's strawberries. So we've got, you know, a plethora of berries on hand, and often all our producers up here have their seconds, whether it's rain affected or the sun, and so it's coming on too quickly that they can't sell it. So we take those seconds and turn it into jam, because, you know, it doesn't matter for a jam. So that was sort of how it started with OzHarvest first, was to grab the berries and create jams. And then this year in January, the weather was so warm that tomatoes and chilies came on strong. So we had a plethora of those, and we said, let's throw that together and make a chili sauce for you.
Happy days. Yeah, as I said, you had me at chili sauce. And Jackie, when you speak to local farmers, I mean, a part of what OzHarvest does is not only feed people who need food in their cupboards and on their tables, whether it be through schools or through homes, but also this is food that would have otherwise gone to landfill. And that's something that forever has stressed farmers out.
Absolutely. And we kind of cottoned onto that earlier this year too, when the weather did turn, when it was so warm and all their fruit was coming on too quickly. And we contacted them as an aside to OzHarvest to say, look, you know, we can take your fruit and turn it into something for you under your brand, which they'd never done before. You know, let's put your label, your own label on that you could perhaps sell at market or do something with as well. But now with the OzHarvest collaboration, we're probably pushing them more that way, is because they don't really know how to sell branded retail products. So it makes sense, let's take it from you and turn it into something for OzHarvest. So we've put the word out already to a lot of the farmers in the valley, saying, you know, when the time comes, let us know what you've got and let's see what we can do.
And then I could imagine, Claire, it would be all hands on deck, because it would possibly, you know, it would dribble in and then it would just flood in, and you'd need to act and move relatively quickly.
Absolutely. And that, I think that's why we're working with such great local manufacturing partners who can support us in that journey and help us source that product to make sure, you know, that beautiful produce doesn't end up in landfill, and that we're turning it into, you know, gorgeous products that people can enjoy and give back through that enjoyment. And we're working, you know, with growers in the Yarra Valley for our jams and chilli sauces, and then also up in the northern rivers of New South Wales, which has obviously been affected terribly by weather more recently, to rescue lemons there for our lemonade. So lemons, strawberries and ginger for our lemonade, our O Lemonade, which is absolutely delicious. And again, every can that we sell gives back to OzHarvest one meal for someone in need.
Well, they look beautiful as well. And I think my daughter loves lemonade. I love my chilli sauce. So it is a win-win there. And then, of course, all the money goes to OzHarvest. Ladies, I'm happy to say that in just the couple of minutes that we've been speaking, you know, we've seen thousands of dollars come in, and now at $161,673.
Wow.
So I know, it's incredible. We have the most generous listeners, and it doesn't have to be hundreds. It can be $10. It can be $20. It all makes a huge difference. Jackie, thank you so much for being so creative and helping out and putting your spin onto these beautiful products and making some delicious things for us to take home. And Claire, well done. I mean, this is a really great job that you've got, and having this social enterprise arm of OzHarvest is something that's really tangible that you guys can just keep building on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. We're so grateful to the ABC for ABC Gives Today, and knowing that unfortunately the need is increasing and every single dollar helps. So thanks again to your generous support, your listeners, and the support that we've had from you.
You're most welcome. Claire Flintoff-Phillips, who's the Brand and Innovation Manager at OzHarvest, alongside Jackie Harvey, who's from Yarra Valley Gourmet Foods. Seriously, the products are absolutely beautiful. If you jump onto their website and have a look, not only do you get a really fancy looking lemonade or a beautiful bottle of chili sauce, that money goes directly to families who need it. So $1, just $1 donated by you is two meals for a Victorian who needs it at the moment. This is our big Giveathon day. We know how generous you are. We are trying to raise $250,000 over the course of the day, and we have done so well. As I said, we're at $161,673. You guys are incredible. If you want to donate, you can go to abc.net.au/VicGives. You can also call OzHarvest direct. They've sort of set up a tally room. Kate Mead is down there. We're going to have a chat with her a little later. That number is 9999 5077.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
I'll touch back with our tally room in just a moment, but if you want to give them a call at OzHarvest 9999 5077, if you would like to make a donation, or go anytime to abc.net.au/VicGives if you'd like to make a donation. And if you scroll down the bottom as well, there's also a silent auction, because we are holding a 774 trivia night. It's going to be hosted by, of course, none other than Jacinta Parsons and Brian Nankervis. But each presenter is going to host a table. I've kept saying that I won't be any good, but I actually think I will be pretty good. So if you want to be on my table, you can vote, and you can, you can donate, and it is all silent. And then that will be happening over the next week or two. And then you can potentially make your way to my table or Raf's table or Bridges' table, and we'll have a great night. If you've never been to a trivia night hosted by Brian and Jacinta, then you are in for an absolute treat. But as we said, you can go to abc.net.au/VicGives. Now, as I said at the beginning of the program, if you are a woman in midlife and you have no desire to have sex, then you are not alone. So the largest study of its kind shows that half of the women in midlife have zero libido and have some type of sort of arousal dysfunction. So what kind of stress is that causing in your life? And do you even speak to anyone about it if half of us, half of the women in midlife are going through this? Professor Suvan Davis, AO, heads up the Monash University Women's Health Research Program in the School of Public Health and Preventative Medicine. Professor, I could imagine this would be a relatively embarrassing thing to speak about. However, anecdotally, talking to women, friends do talk to each other about maybe having no libido and why and when that comes on in midlife. Were you surprised to find by your research, which was a large group of women, that half are feeling like this?
So what we found, hi Rochelle.
Hello.
what we found was that 50% of women were distressed about their sexual well-being. And of those 50%, another 50%, so 25% of all the women surveyed, actually had a sexual dysfunction which caused them distress. Now, that included low desire or low arousal or orgasm problems or sexual self-image. So it could have been any one of those. So what we're seeing is that 25% of women aged 40 to 69 have a concern that doesn't manifest as a particular dysfunction, and 25% had a very clear dysfunction. So it's complicated. A lot's going on.
And this is going to sound crazy, but did most women even realise that? So let's say we talk about lack of desire, for example, or sexual well-being. Do women think, oh, well, this is just normal, it comes with age, this is what we're told anyhow as you get older? Was it obvious to women that this was something that potentially isn't or doesn't have to be the case?
Well, we didn't ask that question. So to clarify, this was a national study, and we recruited 8,000 women. Then we excluded from the analysis anybody who was on hormone therapy or had both ovaries removed or was on medications that would change their hormones, like, for example, hormone therapy for treating breast cancer, etc. And that left us about 5,500 women. And in order not to bias the study, we recruited women to a study of women's health. So we didn't sort of say this is a study of sexual function or this is a study of menopause. It was just a general women's health study. And in that, we included questions about sexual function. But we didn't ask women, if you've answered this question in this way, what do you think about it? We were really just simply documenting how common is it to have, for example, low sexual desire, which was about 28%. And then how common is that to bother you? And we had a distress questionnaire. So whereas 25% of women, for example, had low desire, only about half of those were really bothered by it. What was interesting is for women with low sexual self-image, 85% of women who had low sexual self-image actually had sexually related distress. So having poor sexual self-image is really related.
So what do you mean by that? Is that they feel like they're not desirable?
Yeah, they don't feel sexually attractive. There's a series of questions that then summarise this, but not feeling sexually attractive to their partner, et cetera, not comfortable about your appearance, all of that. And that's really associated with sexually related distress.
There's a few texts already coming in on this one. It says, and then there's postmenopausal for women that once had very active sex life and now couldn't care less about having sex. And when you talk about sexual well-being and the impacts that it has on your life, there's another text that came in very early, actually, when I first mentioned this at the beginning of the program. And it said, unfortunately, lack of libido on my part was the cause of my relationship breakdown after 24 years. It was something that I was aware of for a long time, but I chose to put my head in the sand and hope that it would go away, and now I regret this. Gosh, there's a lot in that text, isn't there, about self-blame, but also maybe not wanting to address it and talk about it, and then there's the impact that it has on relationships, Susan.
Totally. So the first comment about menopause, oh, I'm sorry, something just fell down in here. The first comment about menopause is that where we saw a big jump was between premenopause and early perimenopause. So the likelihood of having low desire that caused distress or low arousal with distress doubled between pre and early perimenopause. It wasn't a change during later years. And the biggest risk factor for arousal and desire disorders are being partnered. Because if you're partnered and you've got low desire or low arousal, it creates friction and tension in the relationship. And that can then result in distress, or a woman being partnered and feeling guilty that she's not more sexually responsive. So being partnered is a really strong risk factor. It doubles the likelihood of having low arousal with distress or low desire with distress.
Do women know who to talk to?
I think even I as a specialist will see women who come with one question and almost at the end of the consultation say, oh, by the way, I hear that you sometimes do, you know, work in this space about sexual function. And it's taken them half an hour to warm up to even ask me the question. So I think it's being comfortable to go and ask someone with the feeling that you're not going to be dismissed or be told, you know, women in the past have been told, oh, you need to just have a weekend away or a date night or and not really being listened to.
What do you want done with this research? I think as a society over the last few years at least, we're getting better about talking about perimenopause and menopause. We're getting better at talking about how that does impact your libido, your sex life and your relationships. But there's still a long way to go, isn't there?
There is. And, you know, it is complex. Again, I said, you know, being partnered was risk factor, but having depressive symptoms is also a risk factor. So I think there are a lot of complex things happening to women at midlife, and it will, if you're feeling like rubbish, it will spill over into your libido. So not everything about libido is about some biological sex drive. It can be your personal circumstances. But I think raising the conversation, being able to talk to your GP about it, and make an appointment so that you've got a proper timed appointment, not a 10-minute blood pressure check appointment to talk to your GP. And I think engaging partners, and whether you've got a female or a male partner, it's still engaging your partner to have the conversation. And the awareness that often this is just totally beyond the woman's control. It's not like the woman is withdrawing from sex. These things are happening to her and she needs to be able to talk about it and share the concerns.
So then is it something that returns when you move through menopause, or is it something that never returns and has to be treated? What's the next stage?
Well, in fact, what we see is that the prevalence of being, let's look at low desire. It increases with age and then increases at perimenopause. It doesn't go away, but a lot of what we see is that the adverse impact seems to lessen a little bit as women get much older. So once you get beyond the age of 70 years, relationships often get to the point where sex becomes less important. But if we're looking at women in their 50s and 60s, it's still really important, and the adverse impact persists. And unfortunately, it can be the cause of partnership breakdowns. The other problem is you've got to make sure that the sexual issues aren't a consequence of a bad relationship and not just assume it's all about sex.
So who should women speak to initially? Is it GPs? I mean, we always sort of push everything to the first stage is to go and speak to your GP, but then as you said, you know, maybe it just turns into a random blood pressure or there's not enough time or the consult is too short. Are women better off speaking to a specialist and finding time to speak to a specialist like yourself, Susan?
I think people should speak to a psychologist and discuss their general life and their relationships. I think the other option is there is an Australian Society of Sexologists, and sexologists are not just people who talk about sex toys. They're people who
talk about relationships and sex in relationships. And I would encourage women to, or people concerned, to seek out someone like that. And as I said, they've got a website and a society. And then specialists, like if you've got a GP that's comfortable talking about it, or your GP might often, you know, most GPs are in multiple practices with shared practices, that they might say, well, look, I'm not the person to speak to about it. Why don't you make an appointment to see so-and-so in our practice?
And someone that they, and if it's someone that you trust, and if it's a GP that you've known for a long time, even though that's becoming quite rare as well, I understand. Really good to get your thoughts on this, and it's incredible because it's such a large body of work. So hopefully this is the beginning of many studies that are done. Professor, thank you. Professor Susan Davis, AO, she heads up the Monash University Women's Health Research Program in the School of Public Health and Preventative Medicine. My name's Rochelle. This is The Conversation Hour. Today is our Giveathon. You know, every year the ABC partners up with an incredible charity. This year it's OzHarvest. And today we are asking you to give what you can, if you can. My goodness gracious, Jelly Beans, you are a generous lot. So in the last 10 minutes or so, you have added about $12,000 or $13,000. Our total is now at $173,000, $573,000. That is incredible. You are all so generous. Thank you so much. Every dollar, like $1, makes two meals for someone who is going through a hard time. And as we all know, sometimes we are just one paycheck away from that being us. It is a very, very thin line that many of us walk on at the moment. So if you would like to donate, I'm going to cross back to our tally room in just a moment because there's some more incredible folk that you're going to meet. But you can go to abc.net.au/VicGives, or you can give OzHarvest a call. That number is 9999 5077.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So this is the sound of AC/DC live at the MCG last night. One of the thousands, tens of thousands there was Bridget Crisfield, a music journalist with Rolling Stone. I'm seeing nothing but four stars, five stars, four stars, five stars. Bridget, how was it last night?
Oh, look, it was absolutely incredible. As soon as you walk in the arena, you see everyone wearing their merch, which are the little devil's horn headbands that flash, the red ones. So it's kind of all like a sweeping lighting installation before they've even come on stage. And, they're in their 70s, so I know people were a little bit, is it going to be as good? And I heard someone describe them as AC decrepit, which, yeah, they are certainly not that. There's plenty of fire left in the old tank. And, just watching Angus Young duck walking while playing guitar like no one else on the planet can was just good for the soul. I still feel a little bit buzzy today.
That's so great. And this is the thing with some of the incredible live music that we've seen in Melbourne over the last year or so. It's the energy from the crowd and when everyone is there and on the same page. And when you think old school Aka Daka fans, people of all ages with their kids as young as 10 were going, was the vibe on the floor, was it really warm and fuzzy?
It was unbelievable. That sort of multi-generational audience is so joyous. And just seeing the kids watching their parents and grandparents rock out as well gets them to see them in a different light. It was just exceptional. And I tell you what, hearing Jailbreak live for the first time since 1991 was such a moment. I wasn't expecting it, and I really...
That was your highlight song?
Absolutely, yeah. Because you just picture that clip, you picture the clip that they filmed for, I think it was for Countdown, and then it ended up being the official clip, which they filmed in Sunshine, I believe, like in quarries, and they had actual dynamite, like blowing up the hillside and stuff like that, which they wouldn't allow now. So that was an absolute treat. For sure.
And what about the support acts? We know we had some great Aussie bands. We had Amel and the Sniffers. How were they? I saw bits of footage. I mean, she just always looks awesome, I just have to say. Her hair, her outfits, how she dances, she gets so much air when she jumps. She just looks incredible. But what were they like?
You could just tell that they've been touring nonstop. They were so gig fit and locked in. And Amy Taylor is an absolute weapon. It was satisfying knowing that a lot of those older crowd members might not have heard of them before. I'm not sure how, because they've been nominated for a Grammy now. But, yeah, there was a lot of, like, open mouths looking around, not knowing what to make of it at first, but I'm sure they all came away new fans.
Downloading. And so how many stars, Bridget? I mean, it sounds very, like, un-rock and roll to give AC/DC stars, but how would you rate the night?
I did 4.5.
Got to leave a little bit of room, hey?
You have to leave wiggle room. I mean, what is perfect in this day and age? But good on you. Near perfect, just a hair away from perfect.
Well, enjoy that buzz, Bridget. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
See you, Bridget Crisfield, who's a music journo with the Rolling Stone. Here's a little bit of AC/DC last night with Thunderstruck. And someone else who was there potentially listening to this, maybe even filming this, was Glenn. He's in Maldon, just near Castlemaine. Glenn, but last night you were at the G. Like Bridget, are you still buzzing?
Yeah, I am still buzzing, indeed.
How was it?
Oh, it was brilliant. I said to your producer earlier that I actually saw them in 1975, so we're going back a bit, when I was 10.
And can you remember that one?
Yeah. It was in a park in Bendigo.
And so comparisons?
Oh, last night was a bit better. Sound-wise, production-wise.
Yeah, a little different.
I've seen them a few times and that's the best they've sounded.
I can't believe when you were 10 you saw them in Bendigo. Like, how many people would have been there?
50. and most like myself were just sort of wandering past and dropped in.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was interesting because I went to Sunday school in the morning and I went to AC/DC in the afternoon.
That's a well-balanced life, really, isn't it?
I never went back to Sunday school.
They changed you. They converted you forever.
They did. Yeah, new preacher.
And did you have good seats?
Look, surprisingly, yes. I wasn't too sure. You go online and you look at the MCG, it's huge. And I thought it was a long way away, but actually I was pretty much perfect. I didn't want to stand. And, it was in front. The sound was spot on and the view was actually excellent. So, yeah, no complaints.
And who did you go with, Glenn? Did you go on your own or?
No, I picked up an old mate of mine from the Castlemaine Railway Station. We drove down and the Bendigo train was full of AC/DC fans going down at 2 o'clock. I dare say it would have been more after that, and from Ballarat and Geelong all came from the regional areas, and also brought my two young sons with me.
And how old are they?
11 and 8.
And oh, what? And how did they cope?
They're really well. surprisingly, the younger one found a bit long and he said that he thought Angus showed off a bit, which he did, and luckily he did. But they really enjoyed it.
That's so good. Did they manage to get it to school today?
No, day off school, rock and roll day today. We slept in a motel and we slept in. And we just had breakfast. I said, this is what rock and roll is, boys.
This is so great. What a great experience you've had. Stayed in a motel, day off school, breakfast in bed and AC/DC.
No, it's actually been brilliant. And like the lady from Rolling Stone, I'm still buzzing.
Yeah.
And she's right. It was actually joy on people's faces. It was just because you go to the MCG, it's not always to see the one thing. Like you're always there as a footy fan, you know, it's always opposition. And last night was everyone's on the same page.
Well, enjoy that buzz, mate. Well done.
Yeah, for sure.
See you, Glenn. Enjoy the train ride home too. Even getting there and the buzz of having other fans with you. Glenn, thank you. Cheryl's in Hawthorne. See you, mate. Cheryl's in Hawthorne. You weren't there, but you heard it, Cheryl.
Yes, we actually had a free concert in our back garden. and I think some of the people in Baldwin and Kew and Malvern as well.
So were you happy about that, Cheryl?
Yes, I was very happy about that. I was happy it wasn't a rave about, you know, two doors up or something like that, because I knew eventually it would be happening before midnight. We'd go to bed. No, we enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it and you could hear it. Gosh, that's a long way, isn't it, to be able to hear it from there?
It was just amazing. We actually opened the back door and went it is actually the MCG, and then community sort of posts started coming through on the Facebook and things and saying, what did I hear? Is it ACDC? And we reckon it was Akadaka. So,
and are you an ACDC fan?
Well, no, I missed all that. I was in Europe for a long time. It was only when I was 1975 or 76 when I was coming back from England that somebody said, oh, you're from Australia. And what do you know Akadaka or ACDC? And I went, no. So I missed all that, but I am now. And I would play that video of Swanson Street in the back truck.
You were there?
No, I wasn't. I was in Europe. So as I wasn't physically there, but I can now enjoy it thanks to the someone took a photo, you know, a video of it, a film of it. So,
good on you, Cheryl. Well, that was a cheap tickets you had yourself last night. Thank you. Gosh, lots of people were talking about seeing Akadaka in the early days. This I saw ACDC in Currumburra in 1975 at the Mother Rock Music Festival, and others saying I saw them at Boronia High School. I think it was 1977. I love the idea of just seeing them in Bendigo and you just happen to walk past and there's only 50 people there. I tell you where there's more than 50 people, and that is down at Oz Harvest today, because we have a tally room full of people ready to take your calls to make your donations. But at the same time, it is a busy, buzzing place where people and volunteers just go about what they do, and that is ensuring that Victorians do not go hungry. One of them is Nick, and Nick is from JC Ducks, who has been participating in a Cooking for a Cause. And I think you provide billboards as well for Oz Harvest all around Melbourne. Nick, you're down at Oz Harvest at the moment. Sorry, it's Deco, JC Deco. I've mispronounced that. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing down there today.
We've been down here in their big commercial kitchen with our team all morning, reusing the leftover food waste, turning it into nice, fresh, healthy meals to go out to support people in need.
So what have you been cooking?
I think they were kind of curry puff samosa kind of things, bit of a hybrid today, vegetarian ones.
Nice. And how many people are around you?
I'm up in the telly room at the moment, and there's a good probably 15 people on the phones taking donations from all these generous people helping to feed their communities.
It's an incredible environment to be in, Nick, isn't it, to witness people volunteering their time, going about their business, but it's also a really stark reminder of what is needed in society and how we all need to look out and to help each other a little bit.
It is, yeah. It's amazing to kind of be a bit more connected to your community and make sure that those who are going without don't.
Absolutely. Well, you keep those samosas coming through. Kate Mead has been down there all morning, maybe munching on a samosa or two, who knows. But Kate, you've been watching those phones ring. You've been watching the volunteers come in and out and the trucks being filled. As we've been saying all morning, every dollar donated is two meals that's being created. You've got people like Nick who are down there who are participating in Cooking for a Cause. Is it just a sort of hype of activity?
Oh, well, I'm back here now, Rochelle. How are you?
Yeah, really good.
You've got me. Sorry about that. Yes, it is a hive of activity. There's been a change of the guard in here. People are just all doing their bit. And then, like Nick was talking about, this kitchen is amazing. I don't think I really understood it. So they gather up all the food that is left over from events or from catering or even our Australian Grand Prix. So you think about the 500 odd thousand people that attend that event coming up in March, and the waste, the leftover food from an event like that. Oz Harvest takes it. They bring it into this kitchen here. There's chefs on board. Volunteers come in and they recreate meals that people, you know, it's not just items. They're actually meals that people just need to heat up or perhaps don't even need to eat up, that are just ready made to eat. The impact is
huge.
Phenomenal.
Now, I don't know if you have it in front of you, Kate, so it's okay if you don't.
Oh, I do.
I do. All right.
I do.
So we started the show, I think, at about 151,000, just a bit over. In the mere 55 minutes that we've been listening and our beautiful, generous listeners have been picking up the phone and calling 9999 5077 or jumping on abc.net.au/VicGives and donating what they can afford. Kate Mead, what are we at now?
And also they are bidding to be on your table at the trivia night. Let's not forget that.
But yeah, where we won't know any answers, but we'll look fabulous.
This is what your listeners have done in this last hour. 174,246 dollars. I mean, like I've said before, these donations come in. Volunteers are taking those calls and they're hearing these stories. There was one, I'm not sure if Vera, were you able to speak to Vera earlier or not?
No, we didn't speak to Vera.
I don't know if you were. No. Okay, let me quickly tell you about Vera. She has made a donation. Her family were a part of the Holocaust. They were Holocaust survivors. And she has made a donation today because she remembers being hungry.
Yeah.
And she said no child should ever be hungry, and I'm making that donation on behalf of our family. And I just...
These are the stories that you're hearing. Kate, thank you so much for being down there and being a part of it and for taking those calls and for standing side by side with those who volunteer their time at OzHarvest. No doubt Bridge will have a chat to you in just a moment as well. Kate, go well. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle. Don't forget to bid on your table.
Don't forget to bid on the table. We are currently at $174,246. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.